scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Logan Gordon.
Okay, we are underway. Happy Monday. It is March 25th. The final week of March is underway, and we get things going this hour on Flames Talk, Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's Steinberg along with you, Logan Gordon alongside me across the table. We're here in our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio on this Monday. Hello, Logan.
Hi, Patrick.
Welcome to the week. We got a short week, Good Friday, so no regular programming, no regular family of podcasts on Friday, but we got a busy week nonetheless, and another frustrating couple games for the Flames, but there are a few bright spots here, and I wanted to kick off this hour by highlighting one of those bright spots in particular, and in that 4-1 loss Sunday at home to the Buffalo Sabres, one of the biggest positives for me, if not the biggest positive for me, was Dustin Wolf again. So he's now started 4 of Calgary's last 5 games. And the thing that jumps out most to me is the fact that Logo, he just looks like he belongs in the NHL. So in these 4 starts, Vegas, Montreal, Washington, and now Buffalo, for me, he looks like the NHL is where he belongs. I thought he was solid against the Sabres, gave the Flames a chance to win. I thought he got better as the night went along. I thought actually he was one of Calgary's best players against Buffalo. I know he let in the 2, and one of them he would like to have back. The 1-0 goal that Peyton Krebs beat him on is one that he wants to have back. But again, you know, I don't come away from any of the last 4 starts feeling like there was a bad goal allowed. And in all of these 4 starts, it feels like he has given them an opportunity to win. And every goalie who makes it to the NHL level is going to have ones that they want back. But just because you want it back doesn't mean it was a bad goal, doesn't mean it was a backbreaker goal or one that, you know, teammates are going to be groaning about. Because the 2 that you could point to in these 4 starts, the Dylan Strome goal to make it 1-0 against Washington and the Krebs goal to make it 1-0 against Buffalo, they were both wide open, clean looks that were solid, high danger opportunities for the other team that the Flames also allowed in front of them. And yes, they scored on it. And when you get beat clean as an NHL goaltender and you miss on a shot, you're going to want it back. But again, I think he's looked good, man. And doesn't mean he's looked spectacular every single night. Doesn't mean he's stolen every single game he's been in. But on this most recent recall, I've really, really liked what I've seen from Wolf, and it just adds to the confidence that I personally have in what this guy could be and how important this guy is going to be as the Flames look towards the future.
Yeah, and even if you want to simplify it down to the numbers that we've seen from Dustin Wolf at different points this season when he was getting more inconsistent starts, right? He had that start in November against Ottawa. He had a couple in December, then didn't see anything until February, and all the time, even the games that he picked up a win in, like he picked up a win against Carolina back in December, but the numbers weren't great. The save percentage, you know, was middling below 900. The goals against was up, but just look at the consistency of his games since coming back up, and we'll start with the Colorado game where he came in the 3rd period in relief of Dan Vladar.
Yep.
Past that, you know, a 966 against Vegas, a 947 against Montreal, dips against Washington, but not many people had a great night against Washington, and you were exposed by one of the greatest goal scorers of all time for where he scored a hell of a lot of goals, and now a 926 against Buffalo. Those are NHL numbers, and I don't think it has any coincidence that those numbers are showing up now that Dustin's gotten his longest stretch of time together in the NHL, because I couldn't personally evaluate Dustin Wolf, and I think you feel the same way, on an even playing field at any point earlier this season where it was spot start here, spot start there.
One day's notice.
Maybe you were up in the NHL for 2 days and then you were back down with the Wranglers, or there was a 2 month gap in between your starts. That's not fair of anybody, let alone an NHL goaltender at 22 years old. So, yeah, I think it's starting to shine through, and I don't think anyone's surprised. Again, we can read through the list of accolades that this guy has, but I just don't think anyone would be surprised that after all the success he's had in the dub, all the success he's had in the A, that now, once he's finally gotten his longest run of NHL time, you know, on the practice ice and at game time, that now he's starting to show out some of his best NHL starts.
Well, and it's not like it was incredible to start when he first played in the American League in that weird Stockton Heat in Calgary bubble season. He started there before going back to Everett, and he got lit up in his first game and had a below 900 save percentage in his first three games, his first kind of introduction to the American League. It started kind of slow there, and it even started a little bit slower in his first full season with Stockton, and then obviously we know where it's gone. And I don't think it should be a big-time surprise that, especially considering the circumstances, to your point, it maybe hasn't been this incredible pop-off-the-page type performance. But what we've seen from him over the last little bit is that he's comfortable, he can make stops, he can hang, and he can give an NHL team a chance to win. And let's not, you know, let's also not forget that the team that he's playing behind is now a team without Elias Lindholm and Chris Tanev and Noah Hanifin here. So he is giving a team with a depleted roster an opportunity to win. And again, he's not stealing every game. He's not single-handedly doing it, and he's not winning every game. His last two starts, he's lost. But to me, it's all about the comfort level that you have watching, and I think it's all about the comfort level that the guys have playing in front of them. And the one thing that I have really, really been impressed by is that I think he has proven, already has proven a ton of people wrong in that he's too small to succeed in the NHL. Well, that's false, because he has done what hundreds of thousands of people would love to have done, and that is play in the NHL and earn a spot in the NHL, and he's won games in the NHL. He's already proven that on a small sample size, he's not too small to succeed.
Well, how many seventh rounders, how many 214th overall picks play one game in the NHL, let alone win an NHL game?
And he has shown that he can beat teams that have players like Jack Eichel and Nick Suzuki, and, you know, he can beat teams and can hold his own against teams that involve Alex Ovechkin and Tage Thompson. Like, he's shown he can play in the NHL. He's shown that he can succeed in the NHL. What remains to be seen is whether or not his size is going to be a factor in terms of long-term NHL success. Is he going to be a guy that can be a number one overall, a number one pick? Try that again. Number one goaltender in the NHL. Can he carry an NHL workload? Is the size going to be a factor in him starting 55
the ceiling,
games?
Right? That's the next point, is seeing how far this can go. Because the initial question is always, with anybody, their first time up in the NHL, can you hang here on a regular basis? And I think you're right. I think he's proven, without a doubt, he can hang here on a regular basis. And the wins, you know, first of all, wins for a goalie are always a tricky thing because it's a team sport.
Yeah.
It's a team game. If you're hanging the game against Buffalo on Dustin Wolf, I think you're looking for ways to take down a guy like Dustin Wolf, who let in two goals. His team only scored one, so it didn't really matter at the end of the day anyways. But yeah, I think as far as from a night-to-night basis, now can you, it's always that next step, right? It's okay, you've done it for a couple weeks. Can you do it for a month? Can you do it for 2 months? Then, you know, we start to understand more and more about what he actually is at this level. Because you're right, I think the first question that so many people wanted to know, and we weren't going to know until he got a longer stretch, was, is the next level actually the NHL for him? And I think he's proven that.
Yeah.
Now, after a couple weeks here with the Flames.
I think I'm really interested in the Dustin Wolf discourse. I'm really interested in the, because I, I saw it on Twitter on Sunday. I saw it again today. Just response to, hey, Dustin Wolf's getting the start. And it's been a lot of, another L for the small guy. There's been a few of those up. There's another L for him. Maybe he's not the savior you think he is. First of all, I don't think anybody here has ever called him a savior. But second of all, this is from Flames fans. I'm just, if you're a Flames fan, don't you want this guy to be what he's been or close to what he's been at every other level? Like, as a Flames fan, don't you want to build this guy up? Because one thing that I keep going back to is, as the Flames undertake this retool, they need to identify, and in a lot of cases, they need to go out and find cornerstone pieces. You know, I keep looking at Vancouver, right? Vancouver's on top of the Western Conference and tied for number one overall in the NHL. They did that a year after being a non-playoff team. They did that with some really savvy work during the offseason. They did a nice job retooling their blue line. They added a couple of players that have really, really helped in terms of their forward group. But the thing that allowed them to go out and do that is that they had their three cornerstone pieces. They had Elias Pettersson up front. That's an elite number one center. They have a Norris Trophy front-runner defenseman in Quinn Hughes. And they have a Vezina, and this is the one that sometimes gets forgotten. They also have a drafted and developed Vezina Trophy caliber goaltender in Thatcher Demko. And the Flames don't have that center right now. They don't have the young elite center. They don't have the young Norris Trophy caliber defenseman. But maybe they have their cornerstone goaltender, and maybe that's what Dustin Wolf can be. And I guess my question is, as a Flames fan, would you much rather, like, I know that he is smaller than Jacob Markstrom. I know that he's smaller than most NHL goalies, but as a Flames fan, aren't you, and I'm not speaking to everybody, but if you're one of those people who doesn't believe in Dustin Wolf, like, wouldn't it be better if you were wrong? Like, do you want to be right on this one? Or do you want this guy to be a true cornerstone piece, which I think he has all the potential to be?
Yeah, it is weird that there has been this sort of sentiment around from a certain group of fans, because you're right, it's not from everybody. There is a certain sentiment of fans that, I don't know what it is, if it's they won't believe it until it's, like, until the Vezina Trophy comes in for Dustin Wolf, they won't believe it. And maybe part of it is we've been down this road before with a couple of other goaltenders in the Flames system, and it turned out to be nothing. But Dustin Wolf has been such a detractor to his own dissenters. You know, if that's a weird way of saying it, but He's turned away every negative about him at every step of the way, and why you would believe that this is the one that's going to hurt him the most, I can't get behind. The NHL level is the step too far for him to go. He was doubted in the WHL. He was doubted in the AHL, and he went on to be a two-time goalie of the year and an MVP. He's always proved people wrong.
Yep.
And maybe that's why in Calgary, and look, the name that comes up to my mind is Joni Oreo, is the one in Calgary where they believed they had this guy. They went to a great length to protect him, and it turned out Joni Oreo was never going to be an NHL goaltender.
Yep.
And maybe there are scars left from something like that. But you're right. If you're hopeful for this team to meet the retool timeline of, say, the new arena showing up, doesn't a 22-year-old goaltender who's starting to find his footing in the NHL really line up nicely with how you're trying to do things?
Yeah.
Because even next year, I don't think anyone's expecting Dustin Wolf to take on a 50-60 game workload, but maybe in, I don't know, 2 to 3 years' time, wouldn't that really fit the timeline of how you develop a goaltender when he's just, you know, starting to come around to 25, 26 years old? It sure would line up nicely for how things are going right now.
Now, again, it's still a small sample size with Wolf. And I guess the thing that is most encouraging to me is that in this most recent recall specifically, he has looked, in my eyes, like a guy where the NHL is where he belongs. Like, to me, there's no question that Dustin needs to be a part of this thing going forward. They can't not have space for him on the NHL roster next year. That has got to be a given. He has got to be an everyday NHLer next year. That doesn't mean he's an everyday number one. That doesn't mean he is starting 45, 50, 55 games, but he needs to be on the NHL roster in my eyes all year next year. And if that means trading Jacob, if that means trading Dan, whatever the case may be, that needs to happen now the way that I see it. But like the encouraging thing for me is that this is still just the beginning of the process. And the warning is this is going to take some time. Like there are going to be ups and downs here. There are going to be stretches where you're like, oh boy, like oh, the numbers have really fallen off for Dustin. That's probably going to happen because he's still 22 years old. And a text came in that says, and the text line's wide open, keep him coming at 960-960. But a text came in earlier and said, you know, this league is not kind to small goalies. True. You know what it's really not kind to? Well, it's also not kind to bad goalies, but it's not kind to young goaltenders, regardless of your size, 6'4", 6'1", 5'2", 500 pounds, 200 pounds. Like, it's not kind to young goaltenders, and it never has been. If your name is Carey Price, if your name, I'm just trying to think of, you know, young goaltenders that have, you know, not popped immediately, and it's taken some time for them to get there. You know, it happens. It takes time. And if you're good, eventually ask Jacob Markstrom. In fact, listen to this clip from Jacob Markstrom when he was asked last week about the what we're seeing from Dustin Wolf. It takes time.
He's showing everyone that he can stop the puck and is playing great hockey for years now. So it's obviously, you know, I know the transition is, you know, it's not, it's a different game and it takes time. And, you know, for me, it took kind of, you know, almost 10 years to kind of figure everything out. And it's, you know, you got to play games to get better and to learn. And, you know, I think, yeah, you know, he's been doing great when he comes in here and play.
So that was Jacob Markstrom last week when talking about Dustin Wolf and what we've seen from him. And, you know, I go back to something Kevin Woodley said last week, our goaltending guru who joins us Thursdays on Flames Talk, and talked about the guy all of a sudden who may have solved Buffalo's goaltending problems in Luukkonen. By the way, best name to say in the NHL.
Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen.
Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. It's like, don't call him UPL. That's no fun. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. That's way more fun to say. But Jacob's point at the end there is about how important you got to play games and you got to learn more about NHL tendencies and NHL breakouts and NHL entries and, you know, guys who can disguise their shot better than anybody in the American League can, guys who can disguise their shot better than anybody on planet Earth because that's how damn good they are. And Luukkonen got into 33 games last year and did not perform very well, but they kept on giving him games. He finished with an .892 save percentage last year, and he's talked, and the anecdote that Kevin Woodley talked about was how, you know, those games that he played on a Sabres team that was competitive, but a Sabres team that was probably not going to make it, and even though he was not performing at a high, high level, those games were crucial for him coming into this season, where through 46 games, he's a .913 goaltender and has given the Sabres their best chance between the pipes to find a guy to maybe get him back to the postseason that they've had in years. And I know they're not going to make it this year, but at the very least going into next year, they feel like they've got their guy in Luukkonen, and he's 25 years old. He was drafted in 2017. So if it takes
his first NHL action was 2020.
Yep, it was. And so if you're the Flames, the process is just starting with Wolf. And it may not be next year or the year after that it's clear he's your guy or that it is definitive that he's going to be the guy, but they have got to give him the runway to prove what exactly he is. And they've got to give him, and I think they absolutely will, by the way, but they've got to give him the runway to grow into what they believe he can. And so to your point, going back to fall 2027, that's what we all have circled on the calendar in terms of when this group would really like to start bearing the fruits of this retool that's just began. Seems like a pretty good time for Dustin Wolf to really be getting settled at the age of about 25, 26 years old.
And this section is in at 960-960. So we're going to lose for 10 years to get Wolf NHL ready. Man, this team loves undersized prospects. No one's talking 10 years. No one's talking about holding on to a guy for a decade to figure out if he's NHL ready. This is his first actual NHL season. He's 22 years old. When has anybody ever put a stamp on a guy 1 year in and said definitively, without a question, that's what you are for the rest of your career? Never.
Unless their name happens. Unless their name is McDavid.
Or yeah, sure. Okay, good. Connor Bedard, I think you're pretty well set to be going forward. Congratulations.
Sidney Crosby, I think we knew what he was going to be for the rest of his career.
But nobody else in the league is taking a decade to decide on this, and nobody here has suggested it's going to take 10 years for Dustin Wolf to figure it out. The process, like you mentioned, is starting now. And yeah, you might have to, I'll use the term, force feed him some starts when things aren't always great for the betterment of his development. But that's part of a retool. And I think that's also part of development, right? Is being able to turn the thing and say, yeah, look, that was a bad one. But if you want to be a starter, and it doesn't matter if you're 5'9 or if you're 6'6, you want to be out there the next game because you're an NHL starter. That's what we do. You wipe off the bad game and you're back in the next one.
Yep.
And I think you're going to start to see that with Dustin Wolf. Maybe not the rest of this year because of Jacob Markstrom and the option that they have to go to him. But in the coming years, absolutely, you're going to see that.
Text line is starting to get engaged on this one as well. If you're listening live at 960-960, let's just go through them. That says, hey, how many great goalies have they given up on? Too many. Let me read you this one from Drazen and Woodbine. Dustin Wolf is not an NHL goalie. AHL and WHL don't count, and neither are the Flames known to develop young goalies. Drazen, how the hell do you know? Like, and this is not me, but like, how is your clairvoyance and your ability to project the position so much better than Sigalette and Conroy and LaBarbera.
Jason DeForest, well-known goaltender.
I thought Jason DeForest was. The reason I bring that up is I've been looking for a clip while we've been talking here, and I've been looking in Jason DeForest's old folders. That's what got
that
going.
What a journey that is.
But, like, how the hell do you know? How can you say? Also, he has NHL wins. He has beaten the defending Stanley Cup champions in an important game. That is not something that you just say, oh, well, nope, that doesn't count.
By the way, the AHL doesn't count is really funny. The second best league in the world doesn't count.
Reminds me of when people were telling me 2 years ago that, you know, Markstrom's shutouts don't count. Their team shutouts don't count. What?
The MVPs and the goalies of the year in the American Hockey League, where all the best prospects across the National Hockey League play, they don't count.
Yep.
That's a really interesting way to go about it. I don't know how anyone scouts anything in the AHL. I guess that goes to Matt Coronado's numbers in the A don't count either, Pat.
No,
that's too bad.
Nope. Matt and Cochran, what did people expect? Wolf to come out with 3 straight shutouts? It's going to be so fun to watch his development and skill improve with consistent starts. This says there's a jersey in the rafter that didn't make a full-time impact with the Flames until he was 24 years old. And if we're talking Vernon, that sounds right-ish. If we're talking Kipper, he was 27.
He's even older, yeah.
Yeah. This says, time for the Flames to gamble. Gamble that Dustin is the goaltending pillar. Move forward and start working on the other two pillars. Let's go. I agree wholeheartedly on that. I think they have to lean in as if this guy is it. That doesn't mean develop him poorly. Do what Vancouver did. And if that means developing Dustin Wolf behind Jacob Markstrom like Demko did in Vancouver, then awesome. If that's not an option for you, then do it another way. But yeah, I think you have to go forward as if he is one of your pillars going forward. Ben from Calgary, the Wolf hate drives me nuts. Few high scoring games and all of a sudden he'll never make it in this league. Obviously he could have had a couple of those, but a lot of fluky goals too. Also, how is it not a top priority to get Wolf a full season to learn and grow under a professional of Marquis caliber? It seems like it would be a must have to me. What are your thoughts on that? That kind of comes down to what Jacob wants to do going forward as well. Nick in Auburn Bay, coming from a Leafs fan that listens daily, it's shocking listening to some Flames fans hate on Wolf. It's mind-boggling. This reads at 960 from Steve in West Hillhurst. I think fans have to be patient and give Wolf the rest of this season and the next two to see what they have in him as a goaltender. Let the process happen. I agree wholeheartedly on that front. Sarah in YYC, Canucks fan Sarah, says, Flames fans have a questionable history of late with their own developed players. The moment they falter slightly, the sky's falling. All the pressure to be perfect is not reasonable, and this is coming from the second worst goalie pressure cooker. At 960-960 from Dylan and Revy. My whole thing is Wolf hasn't proven he can be an everyday NHL goalie, but he also hasn't proven he can't be. He needs the chance to prove it and not be given up on after a bad stretch or two. Temper expectations with every prospect, but don't have no expectations. Mike says, honestly, I'm not going to get my hopes up for any goaltending prospect. Goaltenders are voodoo, so getting hopes up would be a mistake, in my opinion. I made the mistake with Yoni Ortio, Mason McDonald, Tyler Parsons, John Gillies, and etc. If Wolf succeeds, then great. If not, I won't be disappointed again.
And the thing is, Wolf has more of a resume than any of those guys put together. Like, I just, to me, we wouldn't even be having the conversation if it was just player X and it was even 6-1, I feel like there wouldn't be those doubts. Because if you put any of those numbers and any of those accolades beside a goaltender that literally I think is an inch or two taller, Pat,
yeah,
we don't even have the same conversation. And I don't think it's, at least from what I've seen, I don't think it's valid.
This says, I think the goalie height is such a ridiculous take. There's been several great goalies that are similar heights to Wolf, Saros, Thomas, etc. It's been done all the time. Look, there is a reason why the NHL prefers hulking monster human being goaltender. Like, Jacob Markstrom is an absolute tower. Dan Vladar is these are very imposing men. And the athleticism that these two dudes and other goalies like, I mean, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, that guy, when I saw him walk by me on Sunday morning, I'm like, holy, that guy is huge. He's 6'5". You're like, how does this human being move like that? And I get it that is the preference, because when you can have a dude that big and you can find athleticism like these guys have, yeah, obviously it's going to be desirable. In saying that, Tim Thomas is a 2-time Vezina Trophy winner and a Stanley Cup champion. And you know what Tim Thomas possessed? Ridiculous competitiveness, an extremely high work ethic, and athleticism off the charts. A never give up attitude in between the pipes that allowed him to make up for being like a normal sized human. I'm a normal-sized human. I would be undersized in the NHL, even if I was skilled and had any modicum of
not
ability.
Those biceps,
I would be an undersized NHL goaltender because I'm about 6'6", 1. Okay, Tim Thomas is about my size, and Tim Thomas had a ridiculous career. He was one of the best goaltenders of his era, and was a Hart Trophy conversation guy for a few years there. And the other guy is Jonathan Quick. We talk about Saros now, but think about Quick, who's still playing, mm-hmm. and Thomas is other examples as well of quote-unquote undersized guys who more than succeeded. They excelled at the highest level in this league. Good chat. Great stuff on the text line at 960-960. It's a lot of fun having these conversations, and I'm excited for the young man. I really am. I'm excited to see where this thing goes. Steinberg and Logo along with you this hour. We're inside the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. They're your local experts for basement waterproofing, sump pumps, crawl spaces, foundation repair, and radon mitigation. They're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystemscalgary.com.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. It's Steinberg along with you, Logan Gordon, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. So a new week begins, gentlemen. The final week of March is now underway. By the end of this week, March will be done, and we'll be getting ready for April. And as we start a new week, we're also just over 3 weeks away from the end of the Flames' regular season, 12 more games to go. We all understand where the Flames sit in the Western Conference standings and the road ahead of them and how difficult it is. So, gents, knowing everything, knowing where we are, how much time remains in the season, and where the Flames sit, guys, what would be your number one priority? Or, in your opinion, what should the Flames' number one priority be between now and the end of this season?
I would say just continue to build for the future. I mean, they're not going to make the playoffs this season, unfortunately, but it doesn't mean that they can't be a team that contends for a playoff spot next season. And I don't know if that'll happen. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But I think that you can continue to build to trying to get to where you want to go. And that's back to the playoffs. And ideally, not only just getting to the playoffs, but being a team that can at some point in time compete for a Stanley Cup. So I think you do that in a couple of different ways. You continue to build your culture, which I think from the management group to the coaching staff to the leadership group down, they have done this season. Now, there have only been a handful of games where you could really question the Flames' commitment or their work. And I think that says something about this team. You even look at Sunday's game, the second half of a tough back-to-back, and I know they didn't win the hockey game, but they didn't go away without a fight. I think that's fair to say. So I think you continue to try to build your culture, continue to try to win hockey games. And if you win, you do. If you don't, you're not going to make it easy on your opponent. And I think also continue to develop your young players because they're your future. So I would like to see some young guys. And I think a good example is Matt Coronato. I'd like to see him given an opportunity to gain some more experience and hopefully some more confidence at the NHL level in the final 12 games of the season, because you know, I think Matt's going to be an important part of what the Flames do moving forward. So I think it's an opportunity for someone like him, someone like Dustin Wolf, who got another start on Sunday night, to continue to find themselves at the NHL level, because I think you know, those two players in particular, they're not the only ones. You know, Connor Zary's spent most of the season in the league. So is Martin Pospisil. But experience is still valuable for those guys. And they're guys you're probably going to lean on even heavier next season. So the more experience you can get them this season, I think the better off they're going to be and the better off the team's going to be moving forward.
Yeah, for me, guys, it's continuing to see what you have in your youngsters and putting them in key positions while still maintaining that sort of competitive spirit that they've had. I'll use the last two games over the weekend as an example where, yeah, things weren't always going to go great, and there aren't going to be, as you mentioned, Derek, maybe as much emphasis on wins and losses down the stretch. But I still love that this team has had that fight back. They've had that push back all year long, and I hope that's something that maintains throughout the rest of the season, because I think it is important to a word, again, that you used, Derek, like culture and setting that for the youngsters so that when this team is eventually handed over to the Zaries, the Pospisils, the Wolves, those kind of guys, that sort of attitude remains, because despite it being a tough year for the Flames where they're not going to make the playoffs, you can never say that this team quit. You can never say they didn't show up or you know didn't fight back in games and didn't have that pushback. And I think that that's a really important thing for them to maintain. So, yeah, I want to see the youngsters take a prominent role, because I think that evaluation at the NHL level is still really important. But at the same time, don't lose that competitive edge, that competitive will to win, even if it might be tougher down the stretch.
Yeah, it's I don't know if necessarily my number one priority. It's kind of, you guys have both touched on it already. I just don't know if the way I'm going to lay out my number one priority necessarily is would be popular inside the coaches' room or would be shared by the coaches right now. I don't know. We'll find out as they go forward, but you know, even Willsey, listening to Dan Lambert with us on Sunday when he talked about how they're going to go for it and you know, they're putting everything into it until they're mathematically out of it. I do respect that. I really do. And I understand what goes into being professional athletes and coaches of professional athletes and being part of a team. I understand how important these things are and you know, culture building and, you know, setting a standard and all those types of things. But I think for me, what I would like to see starting Tuesday, in fact, I wanted to see it starting on Sunday against Buffalo, but starting Tuesday and beyond, I just think it's time to pivot in terms of what your priority is. And what I mean by that is I think it's time to pivot to, yeah, you know what? Maybe player so-and-so hasn't earned so-and-so role, but we're going to put him there for the rest of the season to for development, for evaluation, for all those types of things. And you know what? Maybe I've loved the fourth line of Kevin Rooney, A.J. Greer, and Dryden Hunt the last two games. That the back-to-back, there's no question who was Calgary's most consistent trio. Awesome. But you know what? That, to me, shouldn't be prioritized over having Matt Coronato in the lineup. That, to me, shouldn't be prioritized having other younger players in the lineup who are up with you right now. And you know what? They're trying Andre Kuzmenko, the best fit for Kuzmenko. No question. We're all on the same page. Kuzmenko's best fit is with Sharon Govich and Huberto. Yeah, but I'd still rather have Coronato on that line, and I'd still rather see what he can do there. I think that's more important for the team in the big picture than having Kuzmenko there. And so just things like that are like, I was very surprised they didn't make any changes other than Dustin Wolf starting from one game to the next Saturday to Sunday. That was very surprising to me that Coronato sat both games, and I just feel like they could be 14 out by the end of Monday night. This is the time to make the pivot. This is the time for Craig Conroy and Ryan Huska to say, in my opinion, you know what? The quote-unquote best possible lineup is no longer the priority. Now the bigger picture is the priority, and getting Coronato and getting Wolf and getting some other young players the opportunity to get these high-leverage minutes going into the summer and in some cases going into the American League playoffs, to me, that is the most important thing and the number one priority, in my opinion anyway.
Yeah, and I'm a little bit torn, Pat, because I guess it really depends on what you think is important in building a culture. For me, it's continuing to try to win hockey games, and there are going to be some games where the Flames have as much or even more talent than their opponent down the stretch, and there are going to be some games, kind of like Saturday's game against the Canucks, where clearly they're the second most talented team on the ice. And listen, they traded their number one centerman. They traded three of their top five defensemen. So this team is not as talented as it was before they made all of those moves. They still have, I think, more talent than probably half the teams in the league, but it's just not going to be their season. So I think one of the ways you build a culture is to not give opportunities to people who haven't earned them. So that's where I'm a little bit walking a tightrope, in the sense that I look at that fourth line with Kevin Rooney between A.J. Greer and Dryden Hunt, and they've played the game the right way. So do you want to take one or two or three of those guys out of your lineup to give opportunities to young players? I think there's, you know, two sides to it. I think it's important to give these young players an opportunity to gain some more experience at the NHL level, but I also don't want them to think that I'm handing them a job. It brings me back to Bob Hartley's time as the head coach of the team. Always earned, never given. I do think that there's something to be said about that. But again, on the flip side, you want to get these young guys some more experience so that they can play a bigger role for you, not only next season, but hopefully for a number of seasons to come. So the coaches, I think, are in a tough spot right now because they're not mathematically eliminated. They're realistically eliminated. I think we can all agree on that. But they're still trying to win hockey games, which, in my opinion, is an important part of building the culture. So here's, a good example of what the team could do moving forward. So if Andre Kuzmenko is indeed playing through something, I think you can give him a little bit of time off. And I think that would be a great opportunity to insert Matt Coronato on the right side of a line with Yegor Sharangovich and Jonathan Huberto. So for me, that's an example of what you could do. Maybe you don't play all three of the guys that are currently on the fourth line every single game. You kind of rotate a younger guy into that spot to give him a chance. I don't know. They're until they're mathematically eliminated, and even then, I still think it's important to try to win hockey games. I think the coaches are kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place as far as who should play and who shouldn't play.
I hear you. The thing that I would say is that I don't think getting Coronato in and scratching, say they did just take Kuzmenko out for a game or rotate through guys on that fourth line, I don't think that by getting Matt Coronato into the lineup, you're saying that winning's not important. And I know that's not what you're saying either, Wilsey. Because I think on this most recent recall, Matt's played some really good hockey. And so I think he, even in the two games where he played on the fourth line, I thought he did a really nice job. And that's not something I would have, I think, been able to say in October or November or some of the times when he's been back up since going to the American League. But on this most recent recall, I think Matt's taken some big steps in figuring it out at the NHL level. It's not completely figured out, but I think he is figuring it out and has taken some strides there. So, yeah, I definitely am not trying to suggest that, no, you just put a bunch of guys, and I know this is not what either of you think I am saying, but I'm not suggesting that, no, you just go all young and veterans be damned, you're not playing anymore. It's not so much that. I think there are certain guys who could really, really be served well by playing and playing in big spots between now and the end of the regular season. Here's another example of, like, and Wilsey, I know you talked about this last week. Put Connor Zary at center down the stretch. Want to see that. And that's another example of something that you could do. Like, just give, whether it is players who aren't playing, some opportunity, or players who are playing, put them in more elevated spots to see what they're all about. I think that's going to be huge in terms of development.
Well, and here's another thing that I would do, and I'm not sure they're quite at this point yet, but they've got to be getting close. So the Sabres, for example, with their win last night on Sunday night, moved to within 6 points of a playoff spot. If the Flames were 6 points out right now, I would be leaning very heavily on my most valuable player, Jacob Markstrom, and he would be getting the bulk of the starts. But they're not 6 points out. They're 12 points out. So I think this is a perfect opportunity.
Yeah.
Because you've got a goaltender in Markstrom, you know exactly what he is. He's been your best player this season. But he's also a guy who's been dealing with something for a good chunk of the season. So what a great opportunity to still get him some starts, but to not overwork him. And, Pat, I've kind of moved to the same spot where you are on this. But I think it should be pretty close to a 50-50 split for Jacob Markstrom and Dustin Wolf, assuming Markstrom is feeling up to playing half the games or maybe a little bit more than half the games between now and the end of the regular season. But if the Flames were closer to a playoff spot and had a puncher's chance, then I would be leaning really heavily on Markstrom. But I don't think they're in that position anymore. So just a great opportunity to give Wolf some more starts. And, hey, he's given them a chance to win hockey games too. So it's not like there's a massive drop off between the two. So for me, those are the types of things I would do between now and the end of the season.
He's Derek. He's Logan. I'm Pat. This is your Daily Flames Roundtable. It's a Monday to start a brand new week, the final week of the month of March. And so, focusing a little bigger picture on our Daily Flames Roundtable, we got lots of time to get into the nitty gritty of the final 12 games as well. But, you know, Wilsey, you and I were talking about this. We talked about this a few times over the last few days at the Dome, getting ready for games, just hanging out in our lovely little hot stove lounge. And a couple times we've just kind of talked about, this is year 10. Year 10 for you calling games, is that right? Or year 11?
Yep. 10.
Year 10, okay. So year 10 for you calling games. This is year, I think, 15 or 16 of me on the broadcast and having that privilege. And there's only been a few years, even in the 15 or so years I've been doing it, where they've been this out of it this early. And definitely for you, we were going through the decade of games you've been calling. They have not really been this far out of it with this much time to go at any point in your tenure or logo since you've been doing broadcasts with us. So I guess just thought I'd give everybody a chance to reflect on how we got here and how on March 25th, the final week of March underway, the Flames are 12 out of a playoff spot and have dropped into like the 0% range of making the playoffs.
Yeah, for me, when I look at the season, and we'll have, as you said, plenty of time to reflect when the season comes to an end, I kind of break it up into two parts. For me, there's the pre-trade of Elias Lindholm, and I would say to an even greater extent, Chris Tanev and Noah Hanifin, and then post, those three guys getting dealt, because the team is dramatically different. You subtract the number one centerman in Lindholm, you take away what has arguably or was arguably the top shutdown pairing in the NHL this season with Hanifin and Tanev, and Flames just aren't as good as they were with those three guys. Even though it hasn't been a great season for Lindholm, it's been a fantastic season for both Hanifin and Tanev. So really, when I look back to the start of the season, I'm not sure this team at any point in time overcame a 2-7-1 start. And, you know, sometimes I think there's too much emphasis on how a team starts a season, but this season is a pretty good example of why franchises think getting off to a good start is so important, because when you dig yourself into the type of hole that the Flames did by picking up just, what, 5 of a possible 20 points in their first 10 games, it really put them in a spot where they were chasing, not just in games, but chasing the season. And I know they had a 5-game winning streak at one point in time, so you could argue that that kind of got them back to square one, back to 500 after that 2-7-1 start. But 500 is not going to cut it, trying to get into a playoff spot in the Western Conference. So I'm not even sure you can make that argument. But, you know, this is a team that didn't get off to the type of start they wanted. I guess we can dig into why. I would say that all the changes during the offseason between a new general manager and a new head coach and a new way of playing, there was going to be a learning curve. And it did take the Flames some time to figure out, and I would focus in on how they changed the way they play in the defensive zone. You know, coaches and players admitted that it took a little bit of time to figure that out and start playing the game and started thinking about playing the game. So I think that we probably shouldn't have expected a super fast start to the season, but they also couldn't afford to get off to a 2-7-1 start to the season. So really it's been trying to play catch up ever since the first 10 games, and with how other teams in the Western Conference have played, and with some of the surprises down the stretch, that the Predators would be the best example for me. I mean, you know, I look at their roster and I look at the Flames roster, especially prior to the Flames moving Lindholm, Hanifin, and Tanev. And I would argue that Calgary's, or at least was, more talented than Nashville. But the Predators got in a hot streak. They're playing with a ton of confidence and a ton of momentum right now. And outside of the 5-game winning streak, you know, the Flames really never got to a level close to where the Predators are at right now, kind of rolling the way they are. So it's been a grind this season because they got off to such a slow start, and ultimately they just were never able to overcome 2-7-1 to get the season going.
Yeah, for me, guys, I think I see it a little differently, but that's just, I think this team for a lot of the year was fighting back against the narrative of what was going to happen when all the UFAs got traded. And I think post-trade deadline, with all of the UFAs gone that we talked about, I think they've fallen to where some of us expected they would be when you take out that kind of talent from your lineup. And I think that a lot of the year they were able to, thanks to some really good leadership in that room and thanks to some really nice injections of youth that maybe we weren't expecting, I think they were able to push back against the narrative that they couldn't be a playoff team or that they couldn't be a good hockey team on a nightly basis because, you know, they used that as their fuel. But at a certain point, you know, the deadline showed up and guys that didn't have contracts going forward had to be moved. That was the mantra set out from day one by Craig Conroy, and there was just going to be no surviving that in my mind, guys. There was just never going to be as good as a guy like Daniil Miromanov has been coming in, and you've gotten some nice contributions at times from Andre Kuzmenko. You were never going to replace what you were going to lose for the Calgary Flames, and you were never really trying to if you were Craig Conroy. I don't think you were ever trying to make a hockey trade. I think this was about gaining assets for the future and, you know, things to use, draft picks, prospects to develop your team over the next couple of years. So I don't think that there was ever a point where, you know, they were going to be able to match that. And I think right now, why we've seen this gap grow so much when it comes to the spot where they are in the playoffs is simply because this was the reality of what was going to happen. We just didn't know when it was going to happen.
Right.
It happened, wound up happening in stages, right? It started with Toffoli in the offseason, then Zadorov happened, then Lindholm happened, then, you know, it happened piece by piece. It didn't all happen at once, but now that it's past the trade deadline and all of that has come together, I think this is what you're left with. And that's not a shot at the guys that are there, because I've been really impressed with their fight back level at every step of the season when these trades have happened. But I think that this was just the unfortunate reality of where they were going to wind up with these UFAs and the situation that Craig Conroy had himself in.
I'll try to make it quick. I'll take it a little bit bigger picture for you guys. I honestly think what we're seeing right now, March 25th, 2024, started in like June of 2022. I really do believe that where they are now, with all these players being dealt and the true ramifications and impact of all those players being subtracted, I think it started with Johnny Gaudreau, and I think it started with Matthew Tkachuk, and where they came off a season that felt like they were cresting and ready to go somewhere. And then everything changed. And Johnny Gaudreau at the last minute decided not to sign here, and the Flames let him walk for nothing. And Matthew Tkachuk a few weeks later essentially told the team that, hey, I'm not going to sign long term. Do with that what you will. I'm open to a trade. And they had two franchise altering decisions made there, one made by Johnny, one made in part by Matthew and then the Panthers and Brad Tree Living at the time. Those are two franchise altering decisions that were made in a span of weeks. And then all of what happened after that, and Huberdeau has, be honest, it's been a disaster in two seasons here compared to the contract. And, you know, they all of a sudden just have not been it. We all thought it might be here, but it turns out that it's here. And it's like, okay, this is kind of the culmination of what they tried to do that summer in response to those decisions. It's finally, I think, come full circle. And now they are doing the only thing that they can, and that is truly taking a step back and trying to build back to maybe where they were coming out of the second round of 2022. I just, all of what has happened, Toffoli, Hanifin, Tanev, Lindholm, all of these guys not re-signing, everything changes if Johnny Gaudreau signs. Everything changes if Matthew Tkachuk doesn't get traded, I think. I mean, it's a completely different trajectory. And the trajectory was started in some ways out of the Flames' hands and in some ways in their hands with the prior GM. But honestly, I think where we are now is kind of the final step in terms of what began in the summer of 2022.
Yeah, I mean, hindsight is 2020. And I think everything you just said is fair. But I also remember at the time, going into the first season post Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk, that there were a lot of people around the league who thought the Flames were a better team going into season one with Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar and company than they were the previous year when they won a playoff series against the Stars and lost the playoff series against the Oilers, maybe built to have more postseason success. Now, it hasn't played out that way. So, again, hindsight is 2020, and we certainly have a clearer picture now than we did when all of those changes were made. But everything you said is fair, Pat. I do wonder where this team would be if Johnny Gaudreau didn't change his mind at the last minute and had decided to stay. Would Matthew Tkachuk have stayed? Maybe, maybe not. I'm not sure we're ever going to know the answer to that question, but it would certainly be a lot different looking team. Would it be a team that would be in a playoff spot right now and a Stanley Cup contender? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, you talk about two franchise altering moves. If Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk do sign extensions, do you have the flexibility to strengthen yourself at other positions where you would have needed to? I don't know that you would have. So, who knows? I mean, certainly what happened in the summer of 2022 changed the direction of this franchise. At the time, we didn't know if it would be for the better or for the worse. It hasn't worked out, but there would be no guarantee that with Gaudreau and Tkachuk or with one of those two guys, that the Flames would have been a lot better this season than they turned out to be. So I guess the exciting thing is they've got a lot of good young players in the system. They've got 24 draft picks, including, I believe, 5 first-round picks in the next 3 years. So I'm anxious to see what Craig Conroy does to turn this team into a playoff contender and hopefully a Stanley Cup contender down the road.
All right, boys. We'll go a little more little picture on Tuesday's roundtable ahead of a Flames game with the Chicago Blackhawks. But for now, we'll wrap this one up on a Monday. Good stuff, boys. Thank you, Willsey.
Okay, guys. Have a good night.
He is Derek Wills. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Cam and Shan, our producers this hour as well. And the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish.